I am mining investor and editor of Resource Stock Digest, head out of the Del Real, here with my partner, Mr. Nick Hodge, who, of course, is also an investor and the publisher of Daily Profit Cycle. This is the 331st episode of our weekly therapy session that we call Investing in Bizarro World. 331 of these, folks. We're going to talk markets, what we're investing in. We fixed immigration, apparently. Nick, I don't know if you caught that, but we got the solution to immigration. That's a big one for me. But look, before we get into that, first and foremost, as always, how are you doing today, Nick? How's the family?
I am doing great, Gerardo. Heading to the lake for the rest of the week, which is why we're recording early this week. A little end of summer shenanigans. And have another trip next week. So you guys might get a special guest or Gerardo by himself. But, you know.
If ICE doesn't come get me.
Oh, man. Well, I'm sure we'll talk about it. But, you know, markets are looking good. Boring is beautiful, as you said before we started recording. And yeah, back to school coming up, a couple of late summer concerts and comedy shows. You know how it goes. So, and then we'll get busy here in September.
Absolutely. No. Same. September is absolutely jam-packed, both on the personal side here, all good stuff, and on the professional side with Beaver Creek coming up and, you know, everything that comes with that. I expect a ton of news from a ton of companies. Excited for that. Got a big boxing match that I'm going to on the 13th of September in Vegas. I'm excited for that. And look, as excited as I am for all of that and all of September, I think it's important to start with boring is beautiful. We are at probably what's going to be the last boring week in August, and we haven't had many boring days, let alone weeks. This week thus far has been a week in the resource space and, frankly, in the tech space as well. If we're going to talk overall markets, where stuff's been consolidating, you're seeing slight sell-offs on almost everything on slow and low volume for the most part, with a few exceptions. And we'll talk about those exceptions in the premium portion of the podcast. But I want to start with the overall indices and the sell-off in the tech sector, because that's been a little bit more pronounced than the rest of the overall indices, which have been, you know, the Dow hit a brand new record high. The bond market's holding in there. And again, boring is beautiful, because I don't think we're going to have a lot of boring come September and moving forward, frankly.
Yeah. I put on the sheet that you've got a summer buying opportunity, and that's precisely what it is. You mentioned a sell-off in the tech stocks. I guess let's start there. Why are they selling off? Something about, if you need to put a reason to it, you know, Sam Altman saying that AI might be a little bit ahead of itself, might be a little overvalued, people wondering about the legs of the AI investment, and subsequently, you know, the critical resources that are going to be needed for that. Uranium's taken it on the chin as well in the past couple of days. If you don't need a reason and you just look at the numbers and the market and the charts, you'll just see that it's a consolidation or a pullback, right? Things don't go up every day. No recession numbers in the cards. Inflation is a little hot, but I think that's okay. And so these are buying opportunities. It's exactly what I was writing to members of Foundational Profits about in June and July and the August issue, that we would take advantage of any volatility in those months headed into the fall to you know, make our final positioning for the balance of 2025 ahead of the kickoff of rate cuts, which are likely going to be in September at the next Fed meeting. You didn't mention Jackson Hole. One of the reason the markets are boring this week, everybody is, you know, waiting with bated breath, as it were, to see what those Epstein protectors are going to say once they meet in Wyoming later this week. And so, a boring week in late summer. So what else? Resources pulled back, I mentioned. So not just a buying opportunity in some of those tech names and the broader indices, but across the board, right? For copper and uranium, I mentioned, and even gold sort of has been in that consolidation pattern between 3,200 and 3,500, and was at the lower end of that recently. So lots of dips to buy out there as we progress towards these rate cuts. And I would add, the last time we entered a rate cutting cycle, sort of 2018, 2019, ahead of COVID, was, you know, the last time that gold ran to records once that virus materialized. So Just being patient, doing that thing where you know what you own, you remind yourself why you own it, and just waiting for the drill results and the macro policy to play out.
You touched on Sam Altman, and I wanna make a couple of points there because the devil's always in the details. When he said that AI had gotten ahead of itself, he prefaced that comment or qualified that comment by saying, "Oh yeah, and we fucked up as it relates to AI. We are way behind the curve." And so it was interesting to me that his following comment was, "But we're gonna end up spending trillions of dollars on data centers." And so it's one of those situations where if you don't read the whole quote, you don't realize that he's talking his book and in indirect ways making excuses for his failure of fumbling the AI rollout, right, for OpenAI. And so I thought that was interesting that in the same sentence, basically, he said AI is going to not be as effective or as advanced as a lot of people give it credit for. Also, we completely messed up our AI rollout. We're behind the curve on that. Also, we're going to end up spending trillions of dollars on data centers here in the next several years. So all three of those things can't be true. I suspect two of those things are true. I suspect that at the very, and I know nothing about AI, right? I'm not the guy to advise you on that, people. So I suspect that if he's saying that they fumbled their OpenAI development, that they fumbled it, because he's not going to come out and say that if he didn't. And I believe him when he says they'll be spending trillions of dollars on data centers. I am somewhat suspicious that he's talking his own book and saying that AI isn't going to be the thing that everybody thinks it's going to be anyway. And so it doesn't really matter that we messed it up on our end of it. I thought that was funny.
Interesting. You know, more of the same. So not to diminish his comments or your thoughts on them, but this is in the thesis of what you and I have been saying for years, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yep.
No matter the rate, the speed or the timing of AI adoption, the trend has been that way. You and I were in a data center in Sweden like 10 years ago or something like that, right?
Yes, sir.
Like
2016, I think.
And that's just was part of sort of the adoption and the growth of blockchain and crypto, which, oh, by the way, is still going to require a lot of electricity and data center space and build out. But, you know, the future is digital. We've said this for a long time, and that's powered by electricity and data centers. And, you know, put on your multi-leveled thinking cap and, you know, think about the inputs to those things. And it's the raw materials, the building blocks, the critical elements, the things that you've been reading about, the terbiums, the galliums, the cesiums, the on down the line, right? And so, Sam Altman is just the next domino to fall as we build towards this resource market that is already starting to break out and that we expect to continue. You know, while you were talking about the Sam Altman, he owns a large position in Oklo, by the way. He's one of the founders of, you know, one of the entities that is going to power all these things, the small modular reactors. But, you know, I also saw a big announcement from Amazon this week about essentially digitizing grocery shopping, right? They're going to be in over 1,000 cities. You can get fresh produce, a bunch of bananas delivered to Round Rock, Texas in the same day, right? Don't even have to take yourself to the HEB or the Piggly Wiggly. And I was thinking about that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, every time you click a button, right, to buy a bunch of bananas, you know, it's, signal goes to the data center, and if they're gonna, you know, roll out groceries, then of course, you know, this is going to require more inputs and electricity and those raw building blocks that, you know, go into powering Amazon Web Services or ChatGPT data centers or Microsoft or Meta or right. And so all those things, speaking of they all need ore, no matter which brand emerges victorious, no matter which technology is adapted, whether it's LLMs or crypto or government spying or, you know, big tech digitization or the Internet of Things. Like, no matter which one of those things we're talking about, we're still talking about the same inputs, rare earths, copper, critical minerals, uranium, right?
Yep. With a little sprinkle or a big sprinkle of lithium in there, because that, you know, the EV sector continues
for sure
to grow, and demand, I think, is going to outpace supply here over the next couple of years. I was thinking when you were talking about us being in Sweden in data centers, and it made me laugh because it's so interesting how speculating in things is, sometimes it's better to be lucky than good. And in that case, we weren't lucky or good, right? We went to go see a data center, y'all, and we're in Sweden, and it's literally across the street, right? Like across the street. It was a street that separated these two facilities. And we went and saw the one facility that was more modern, we thought had a better team. My fear at the time, knowing nothing about, you know, crypto and technology and data centers, my fear at the time when we met the team, we all had a big meeting with all the execs. And I remember saying out loud and asking them, you have an absolutely phenomenal team of brilliant minds here. Do you think there's ever going to be a point where there's too many brilliant minds and nobody's taking the lead on anything? And, you know, not to say that I called that, but that is a bit of what happened. So to make a long story short, folks, a lot of people had a lot of good ideas. Not a lot was executed. And the company across the street has gone on to become, you know, one of the leaders in the space as it relates to mining crypto and Bitcoin and doing it with very, very healthy margins. So sometimes it's better to be lucky than good. And on that one, we absolutely fumbled that one. We picked the wrong horse on that one for sure.
Look, it happens, and that's the nature of speculation, right? But the other side of that coin is that, you know, whatever it is, 8 of the last 12 placements we've done that have doubled, they make up for the ones that you lose 80 or 90% of your capital. And make no mistake, you know, a few and far between, we do lose, as you just outlined, you know, 80 to 90% of our capital. That's the nature of speculation. If you'll indulge me for one more second, there's another thing I wanted to talk about, and I can relate it to that. So we were in data centers 10 years ago. We were talking about crypto and the need for cool data centers and efficiency, et cetera. I mean, it's literally been a decade. We're in 2025, and we're talking about the need for data centers and efficiency and the same thing we were talking about a decade ago. And that translates to other parts of the market. I did want to talk about graphene for a second, and that's my transition, because
it's a good one.
Folks have been talking about graphene on the Twitterverse and in the emails. Mentors of ours have mentioned it. Big marketing groups that I know seem to be infatuated with it. And if you follow Kevin Bambro on Twitter, you know where some of this recent fervor has originated. He's a former Sprott guy turned into a independent investment guy, and now is seemingly doing some marketing for graphene and graphite companies. These things happen, right? Like little pockets, little niche corners of the market get popular when you're in an overall resource bull market. I'm thinking back to things like, well, I'll talk about graphene in a second, but like vanadium, for example, had its day a couple of years ago, or scandium will have a little run, or things like that, right? Graphene, graphite is one of those things, but it's not something new, right? Like I read some of these materials recently talking about, you know, graphene as a new material. This graphene won a Nobel Prize over a decade ago. So I just wanted to spend some time on graphene because, like you said, it's out there and it's a hot topic. So that's what we do. We're hot topics like the mall over here.
And so, I want to add one thing really quick, because you mentioned Kevin, right? You mentioned Kevin. I do want to say this. I don't know this to be true. I haven't followed it too closely, but I've absolutely followed it because it's become a thing in the resource space with a lot of the bigger, more influential names getting involved. He has publicly stated that he has 18 million shares that he owns and that aren't for sale. So I will give him his kudos if that is indeed accurate, for eating his own cooking. And when you eat your own cooking to the tune of that, you get to talk about whatever the heck you want to talk about. As far as the company goes, that is the definition of eating your own cooking, whether it goes to $1.50, 10 cents again, or it goes to the $1,000 per share that he thinks the company can get to one day. Don't know, no horse in the race, but I did want to highlight that point.
We haven't even mentioned the name of the company yet. So I guess let me just take a second and get it all out there, because we jumped around a little bit. So the company that he's involved with is a company called a Hydrograph, I believe it is. And this is a company that's up several 100%, if not 1,000% in the last month or a couple of months. Yep. But there's lots of names that are related. Like I came across one called Black Swan Graphite or Graphene. There's another one called Nano Explore. Let's take a step back for a second and go back to there's nothing new under the sun and everything comes back around. It was 2012 when I made a visit to a graphite mine in Ontario when graphite made its first run because it was needed in batteries. And you remember this as well with Leading Edge Materials and Woxna and graphite had its run, right?
Still in the portfolio.
I did a lot of research and learned as much as I could about graphite and graphene. So graphene is like a one atomic layer thin sheet of graphite. Yeah. It's carbon. It can be made naturally. It can be made synthetically. It's used for lots of different things. It becomes a heat sink. You can put it in batteries and it stores electrons, making them more efficient. You can use it to insulate the heat from batteries against other components and sensitive systems, i.e. Electric vehicles and sensitive electronics like iPhones. And for a while, we didn't think we had enough graphite, right? That was the first boom, 2011, 2012, 2013, the advent of Graphite One. And there's Northern Graphite and all sorts of companies piled on, right? And then some synthetic companies came along. So I'm not sure. All that to say, again, I view one of my primary jobs as chief bullshit detector, right? And I've seen a lot come and go in the 17 years that I've been doing this. And I just wanted to get out there that graphene is not a new concept. It's been known for a long time. We know how to make it. It's not particularly complicated. The folks who won the Nobel Prize shaved out a bunch of graphite, put a piece of scotch tape on it, and lifted up one layer of the carbon atoms, and they got a Nobel Prize for creating graphene. So is Hydrograph and Nano Explorer going to go up 1,000%? I don't know, but I do know that this is one of those little niche bubbles that emerges inside the resource space every once and again, and you should trade cautiously and know your position sizes, right? So anyway, just wanted to talk about graphene a little bit because I see it being positioned as something new and miraculous and starry-eyed, things like that, but we've made the trips. I've gone to graphite mines. I've written reports about it 13 years ago. Nothing new here. And so anyway, I just want to talk about graphene for a second as one of those little niches in the market. Don't know how some of those companies will play out, but do know that there's a lot of graphite companies out there and a lot of ways to invest in it.
Yeah, and the little that I do know about the company, it seems to be like the real value here isn't in the graphene, it's in the patents that the company holds. And again, I know nothing about the patents. I have no horse in the race. I do see that they just put out some news. Their new operations will be on East Elmo Street here in Austin downtown.
Nice.
Which is, you know, I think right next to a brewery, if I'm not mistaken, which if you live in Austin, everything's right next to a brewery. So I might have to check them out once they get up and going and get a tour. And who knows, maybe there's an opportunity to be had there, right? But it's been quite a ride. I mean, the stock's got a 52-week low of 10 cents. It's got a 52-week high of 372. All of this has happened within like the last couple of months, right? And so it's definitely been a ride, right? On June the 6th, the stock was 22 cents. And here we are now, it got as high as 372. And you know, it's had like a 30-40% pullback. It's sitting there at $1.72 Canadian. So
yep.
Know what you're in, like Nick said, know your position size, know your risk tolerance. And know that, yeah, who knows? Maybe it does go to $50 and maybe it goes back to 50 cents. Don't know what to tell you on that one. Not our specialty, and definitely not a patent expert when it comes to stuff like that.
No, it definitely is a university patent. I've got a mixed track record with those. So keep an eye on it. Something interesting for sure.
Yeah, let's get back to boring being beautiful, right? Gold and silver. Every time they try to bring gold and silver, you know, below 3,300 and below 37 or 36, even on the silver side, it's like, nah, like we, it's boring right now. And treasuries are stable and bonds are stable right now. And the overall indices outside of the tech sector is pretty stable. But I think we'll just hover right around the $3,300 and $37 mark, which I view as extremely bullish for the rest of the year, given the fact that we have, and I think we touched on this last week, many, many, many catalysts coming up in September, right? We have company-specific catalysts, which we touched on last week, especially in the premium portion of the podcast. But we also have a lot of macro catalysts with revisions expected on jobs numbers for not just months, but for the entire year. We have the interviewing of potential new Fed chairs, all, of course, which are dovish, and all, of course, which are going to be put in play the way Powell was by Trump. People forget that part. To break the dollar down, make it go lower, and, you know, make the refinancing, in essence, of the $9 trillion of short-term debt that we have to refinance this year a lot cheaper. And that is really the urgency within the administration. So no coincidence that they want Powell to resign or give him rate cuts or just shoot him some bail. They don't want to refinance $9 trillion worth of debt at a higher rate. And then 3 months later, get a new Fed chair in there that's going to cut, you know, the Fed rate down by 100 or 200 basis points. That would make them look pretty silly by not getting ahead of it. But again, like a lot of things with this administration, whether you like it or you don't like it, they seem to be very reactive with stuff. And a lot of the proactive stuff seems to be silly, and we'll get to immigration later on. It was one of the silliest fucking things I've ever heard in my life. But thoughts on gold and silver being boring, and let's lump copper in there and even uranium. I agree with your sentiment on the buying opportunity there. But all of it seems pretty like, we'll perk up in September. We got a lot coming.
Yeah, you nailed it. I mean, I'll say everything you said in a different way. You should be buying the dip in gold and silver and in related equities. On gold when it gets close to 3,300 and the equities fall because gold is going down. You know, I think I got a Bloomberg newsletter last week. The subject line was gold loses its luster. Like those are the days you want to be buying gold and gold stocks, right? And the same with the silver on the downside, 35, 36. And then, you know, eventually... this is sort of a continuation of its bullishness. It's consolidating in a bullish continuation, both gold and silver. So gold will eventually get above $3,500 and the bull will continue, and then silver will eventually get above 40 and the bull will continue. So copper's a little different because you had the tariff back and forth recently. It's obviously below $5. I went through some quality name last week that I bought as the premium portfolio pick in the copper space. That you got a good buying opportunity in copper, sort of across the board, as you get some missteps in earnings from big companies like BHP and Glencore, for example. So pick your flavor there. There's a lot of good names, copper ETF or HUD Bay or whatever it is. But copper is in a long-term structural bull market. And as I said, I just added a new copper name last week.
There you go. Got some freebies there, folks. Ditto on everything right there. Lithium, you know, we had a great run in the lithium spot price and in the futures price, and now we're having a pause, and I think a pause is healthy. Things are not supposed to go straight up, folks. So I think you're getting a heck of a buying opportunity in some of the better lithium names as well. We will talk a few of those names when we get to the premium portion of the podcast. Anything else market related that's sticking out to you, Nick? I know volatility, there isn't much there right now. We did talk private placements. We did get into the track record. I do want to say this. We're putting the finishing touches.
That's it.
On our due diligence on a new financing, and possibly two, that we are extremely excited about, that I will personally, in at least one case, once again, be writing a substantial check for. And look, it's a company that's, I expect the next time I write a check, or I would hope, knock on wood, right? that the next time I write a check, the market cap and the valuation is 4 to 5 times what I'm writing the check at now. And I say that to say that I couldn't be more excited about writing this check and really providing the company, helping provide the company, the treasury, to carry out some very, very important drilling that I think will be exceptionally consequential for the U.S., for the company, and for us large shareholders. But anything to touch on the private placement side of things, Nick?
Just a couple of things quickly, because I continue to get questions from new members to private placement intel. And so I just wanted to touch on the ins and outs of private placements. Search this site, Daily Profit Cycle, or call our customer service, you know, Jimmy Mengel, to learn more about private placements. But they're a little bit different than the traditional investments. So you just said, provide this company the treasury to get drilling. That's exactly right. When you do a private placement, you're buying the shares directly from the company. They are issuing the shares to you directly. They're unregistered securities or market exempt securities. And you're typically sending dollars right to the company, and they send you the shares, or they send them right to your broker. So it's a bit of a different process. You do need a full service broker, like Schwab can't handle this for you, or Robinhood, for example. And so we make broker recommendations. There's paperwork that goes with it. I have video tutorials once you sign up to Private Placement Intel to show you how to fill out that paperwork and advise you on, you know, how to maintain your paper trail for when you're doing that. So just wanted to get that out there. That will help you do it, because we've had a lot of new people, and thank you for that. And I'm glad that people are taking advantage of the opportunity to invest this way, because it's obviously been lucrative for us. And then lots of folks that have followed us as we've become more active in private placements over the past couple of years. But we'll provide you the tools that are necessary to create the accounts and get the paperwork done and to understand the process, because again, it is a little bit different and I'm still learning things, and there's multiple ways to skin a cat. Like Gerardo knows, I keep a folder for each private placement that I do with a little hanging tag that has all the paperwork in there, the sub docs, and Gerardo plays it a little bit more fast and loose. But between the both of us, I would imagine we've done over 200 private placements. I know I've done over 100. So we've seen a lot of things that come across our desk. One, we've vetted a lot of deals that have come across our desk. Two, we filled out a lot of paperwork for related private placements, whether they were RTOs, reverse takeovers, or three-cornered amalgamations, or CPCs, capital pool corps that were doing a qualified transaction to then become public, or subscription receipt financings, or non-brokered private placements, or brokered private placements. Like, all those have come across our desk. And so the other day, someone was wondering, hey, what's the difference between a brokered placement and a non-brokered placement? And I took 10 minutes and I answered the question. So whatever it is, we urge you to learn more about private placements. And as Gerardo was saying, we'll have another private placement coming up here soon that will open up membership for. We continue to offer a discount, $2,025, as opposed to the $5,000 retail price that it typically costs. And we're
that's
at the
a gift, by the way. I gotta pound our chest a little bit. We've been really fortunate, folks, with the track record we've had over especially the last couple of years. But again, not resting on our laurels. We're definitely staying humble and boots on the ground and really vetting the heck out of these deals, because again, we eat our own cooking. And so if we do well, by default, you're going to do well. And if we don't do well, then you're not going to be very happy with us. So yeah, no. I think that's a heck of a deal. And frankly, I don't think we should be offering it at that price for very much longer. So y'all should be taking advantage of that, because the deal flow continues to be exceptional.
Excellent. So high grade gold lithium property that's never been really properly drilled, with super high grades on both the gold and lithium front on private land in the United States. That's the next deal that's coming up. We'll give you more info when it's available. And the last thing I wanted to say in this market take section before we get on to Bizarro Banter was just about iron ore, which doesn't come up a lot, because we're usually, it's a huge industry dominated by huge players. And then we dabble more in the junior side of things with different commodities and precious metals. But nonetheless, iron ore is obviously a huge market, a hugely important market. One that can show you the sentiment of macro winds, as evidenced by, you know, China's imports of the things from Australia, etc. But anyway, iron ore is a huge market in Australia and Sweden, and it's traded in ore, like the actual ore, the rock that comes out of the ground. And forever, and I'm not a huge expert on this, but I thought it was worth conveying and then letting people do their own research, or at least getting my big point across, is that things are traded in grades, right? Like forever, it was a 62% iron ore grade. That was like the tradable contract, just like you have a tradable contract for, you know, futures or physical for nickel or silver or gold or anything else. Well, the standard for iron ore has been 62%, and that's changing. And I thought that was worth mentioning for a couple of reasons. The biggest reason is that the grade is going down. The new standard is going to be 61%. And that's just reflective globally of ore grades going down. We've said this about gold. We've said this about uranium. Like all the good deposits have been found. We've said this about copper. You know, the deposits are now harder to find and they're lower grade. And that's why we're in a deficit or approaching a deficit for a lot of these commodities. And it's why the majors have to invest in the juniors that we specialize in to replace their reserves. So while we don't dabble in iron ore, it's a microcosm or a macrocosm, I guess, because it's big.
Yeah,
it's a macrocosm of what's going on in other commodity sectors around the world. The ore grade simply isn't as good. The second reason I wanted to bring it up is because someone has to track that ore grade and get all the data and amalgamate it and organize it and make sure it's transparent so that the exchanges that provide these contracts, like the Singapore Metals Exchange, LME, things like that, have the correct data, and we're trading secure contracts backed by real metals. Forever, that process has been plagued by inefficiencies, inconsistencies, and outright fraud, as evidenced by, you know, ingots showing up that are painted rocks, or people being short, entities being short, more nickel on the London Metals Exchange than physically exists in the world, and almost takes down the London Metals Exchange, and then they've got to unwind the trades. You guys remember all this happening, right?
Yeah.
We've long been invested in a company that does some of that data tracking and is now partnered with another company that is offering new and transparent futures and physically deliverable commodities contracts. And so if you're going to change something as important and global as the grade of iron ore concentrate, I would imagine that these data companies that are focused on mining and futures contracts, I'm looking at you, MineHub, another freebie for the week, is companies like that are going to be involved in changes like this. And so anyway, I thought I don't know if you saw that story that the iron ore grade was getting changed on the tradable contract, but I think that has huge implications and underscores the reasons that we're involved in this in the sector, and underscores the reasons that we're invested in some of the companies that we are.
No, well said, top to bottom. So yeah, hopefully that gives you all a good macro take and a good micro take on commodities, overall markets, volatility, treasury yields, bonds, and likely policy outcomes here over the next several months. Let's get into funny and not so funny stuff. Not so funny stuff. The Israeli head of cybersecurity was caught trying to lure a 15-year-old in Las Vegas. He was arrested, along with several other, I believe seven other child sex predators or alleged child sex predators. And not only was he like let go, but they gave his passport back and said, all right, you can go back home. Back home is Israel. And last week we talked about Ghislaine Maxwell being allowed a work release program while in federal custody for sex trafficking kids to nobody, apparently. Nobody else gets that kind of privilege or gets that option when you are convicted of a sex crime in a federal prison. Work release isn't a part of the deal. One of the few only other people that got such a sweetheart deal on the state side was in Florida with Jeffrey Epstein, coincidentally. And so I don't know. It's kind of getting old every week seeing like ICE arresting, you know, brown people, many of them U.S. citizens, and keeping them for days on end while they figure it out. And then, you know, turning around and seeing And I don't care where you're from. I don't care if you're from Israel, Mexico, wherever. If you're a sex predator and you're preying on kids, like, that's where I want my law enforcement dollars going as a taxpayer. I can't stress this enough. This shouldn't be controversial to anybody. And I'm just getting fed up with the selective, maybe selective isn't the right word, with the favoritism that certain groups and certain lobby-friendly organizations and states and countries get when it comes to fucking over kids.
Yeah. You saw the same story I did. That guy was very high up in the Israeli government as it relates to cybersecurity, certainly within Netanyahu's inner circles. The story didn't get any traction nationally. The story I read was from, I think, like the Las Vegas Review Journal, which is a local paper, obviously. He was in town in Las Vegas for a cybersecurity summit or conference and ended up, talking to law enforcement online who was posing as a minor and setting up a meeting with that person and encouraging them to bring a condom and to meet it, at which point he was arrested. Doesn't make any sense. You try doing that and see if you can get released on bond with no additional provisions, which is how he got released. And then, as you said, was given his passport and allowed to go back home. That just simply doesn't compute, man. It just doesn't compute. And like you said, getting real fed up with it for sure.
Yeah. On a more, again, funny, not funny side, I guess we solved immigration. Immigration has been solved. Immigration's an issue that has been near and dear to my heart.
Did Dean Cain solve it?
I just had a friend that moved out here, and you know, he had been stuck in the process doing it the legal way for like 6 years. After 6-7 years, he finally was able to get a citizenship, right? And couldn't be happier. It took 7 years, and that was with like a lot of support and attorneys and doing it, you know, the right way. And I have family members and friends where it's taken decades on end, right? And so I say that to say there is no legal immigration process that is just or efficient or reasonable for anyone looking to escape a situation or just better their situation through upward mobility and the great opportunities that America still provides. But we figured that out. We're going to go ahead and spend $2.97 billion, I believe is the number, somewhere close to $3 billion, painting all of the wall black so that the wall, the fences are hotter, and it'll make people that are looking to come here illegally so uncomfortable that they no longer will try that. We're going to spend almost $3 billion on this fucking idea, folks.
I'm thinking of the Rolling Stones painted black. I don't know why, but, you know, I'll tell you a story about why that doesn't make sense. I mean, I saw somebody scaling the wall the other day, but I was reading the story recently about government inefficiency, and it had to do with bridges in New York City. And there was a plan once upon a time to put LEDs on bridges to make them light up. And I guess you could control the LEDs and make them go with music or things like this. And so New York City ended up spending, I believe the number was like $100 million on these LEDs to put all over these bridges before the plan was either forgotten about, squandered, or a new administration came in and then it was abandoned. But they bought the lights, and you can rest assured they bought the lights with taxpayer dollars. And the lights are just like sitting in a warehouse now, and they were never used, and taxpayer money was squandered, as it often is. I expect and suspect that the result in the case of this black paint, which I just heard of for the first time, will be the same. I mentioned earlier that I was a bullshit detector. This is one of those stories where you can just say, no, that's bullshit, right? Like, that's not going to work. It's going to be ineffective, and the government's going to lose money. Some of these things, and you got to be honest with yourself, like some of these things you can spot if you've been paying attention close enough. Our brains work in weird ways. You say that all the time. But what I thought, one of the things I thought of while you were talking about that is Blue Sky. Do you remember the Blue Sky app that was going to take over Twitter because Elon bought it, and Elon was running Twitter into the ground, and all the liberals and progressives were abandoning it, and even some of the newspapers and stuff, when they put the share button on their articles, got rid of the Twitter and the X, and put up the Blue Sky. And I was saying a year ago, like, you guys are going to forget about Blue Sky, like you forgot about Clubhouse. You probably don't even remember Clubhouse. And sure enough, the data is now out, and Clubhouse sucks. Like, the data, the growth is down 60%. There's no post growth. Essentially, that fad is now done. And you could see that last year. Like, I was saying, it's stupid to go leave for Blue Sky. Like, that shit's not going to work. And so, same thing with this story. Like, the black paint's not going to fucking work. Like, that's dumb.
But fear not, because you know what they did back in the Coliseum days, right? When everything started getting crazy and everybody started using critical thinking skills and looking at things more objectively and less tribalistically, if that's a word.
It is.
What they did is they entertained you. They gave you fights to the death. And so now, luckily, the White House has not just renovated the Rose Garden to look like a mall. But they've also introduced the idea of UFC fights at the White House. And so, I mean, look, inflation, immigration, kids getting abused, allowing people to abuse them. All these things are things that have solutions to them. We don't seem to be very focused on them. $37 trillion of debt. We're adding to that. We're not cutting that. But, I mean, we can go to the White House, man, and go check out some UFC fights. It's going to be all right, man.
That's it. I couldn't believe it was true when I saw the story. It was in the New York Times, and not just a possibility. Dana White is saying they are having a UFC fight next July 4th to celebrate the 250th anniversary of the country.
If that ain't a sign of the times, man. I mean, can you make this stuff up? If South Park did it, the right would be furious. They would say, this is so unrealistic. This is such a un-American portrayal of, you know, the Trump administration. Again, this isn't a partisan thing. It's just historically what happens when things are starting to spiral out of control. Have you got the Epstein files yet, folks? Have we got the names yet? Have we got the whole list? No, you're not going to get them. You know why you're not going to get them. For the same reason Galeen's doing yoga on work release right now. You know the reasons why. So, yeah, hopefully more critical thinking, hopefully less tribalism. I pray for common sense, right? Not to say that I have the most or even a lot, but if you can't see through some of this stuff, folks, you got to take a long look in the mirror. Look, I know you're going to be out next week, so have a great trip, Nick. But before we let you go, let's get to the premium portion of the podcast and give the people that pay us their hard-earned dollars and grant us their time. Get them their money's worth. Let's get to it. I am Gerardo Del Real along with Mr. Nick Hodge. This was the 331st episode of our therapy session that we call Investing in Bizarro World. I will see you next week, folks. Nick, enjoy your trip. Everybody, have a beautiful week. Take care of each other out there.
Thanks. See ya.